And we're back, Stripe Show Podcast, on a Thursday. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for tuning in. Usually Thursday is, as you know, instruction. We have a top teacher on. We look at video. We break it all down. And, well, this week, we'll do a little bit of that. We're going to look at this guy's swing here in a little bit. We had his coach on a few weeks ago, which was well-received, Brian Cregham, top young coach, coming on, and we were looking at this guy's swing, showing you all of the improvement that he's been making and talking about his sick putting stroke, because I've got some questions about that as we get into it. We appreciate his time here on a Thursday. Denny McCarthy, thank you for being here, sir.
Yeah, thanks for thanks for having me on. I listened to your podcast with my coach Brian, and a lot of good stuff in there, and you guys can probably see why I trust Brian a lot with with a lot of things golf related. So looking forward to diving into some of these topics. My golf swing, golf game. I'm excited, obviously, about the improvements I've made over the last few years, and excited to share some things about it with you.
Yeah, Denny, you've always been, let's face it, one of the best putters in the world. I mean, I don't care what tour on. I mean, you have been a top putter on the PGA Tour back-to-back years. I believe you were the strokes gained putting number one, so that's always been a strength. But as I've watched your game since coming out on the PGA Tour, you can see some of the development in your ball striking, and I even think from a short game standpoint. So we'll get to that a little later in the podcast. I've got some video that we'll put up, and we'll shed some light on that, as we did with Brian. But I'm curious, it's an off week for you. You've got an elevated event next week. I appreciate you tuning in. I'm sure you're trying to get away from golf, but share with my viewers an off week for Denny McCarthy. How much golf? How much non-golf? What's it look like?
a lot of non-golf over the last year or two. I feel like I've just played so much golf, a lot of big, stressful, hard golf courses we play. And so the more I come back home for an off week, the less golf I feel like I've started to play over the last few years. But I still like to, it depends if I have one off week or two off weeks. You know, I was pretty tired after Hilton Head and Zurich back-to-back weeks. Mm-hmm. I did something light with Brian yesterday morning, just for a few hours. That was the first time I touched a club, not touching one today. Usually I like to get in the gym though, and maintain strength and work on the motions of the swing, things that I'm working on in my swing. I like to simulate those in the gym, even though I may not touch a club that day, to just kind of keep those patterns, feeling the same way. And, yeah, the off weeks, I mean, we play so much golf. I mean, I travel 30 weeks a year, and, wow, you know, I think I realized that a couple years ago, and maybe that's why I don't play as much golf in the off weeks now. But, if I have two off weeks, I like to take a majority of that first week off and get back into it maybe on that first weekend. Mm-hmm. You just need a little time off. You need a little break. And that way it gets me excited to kind of get back into it. I feel refreshed. My body feels recovered, energized to get back into it. This week I only have 1 week off. I haven't done much the last few days. I mentioned just working with Brian for a few hours. I'm actually flying. I'm in Jupiter, Florida right now, but I'm flying home to Maryland for the weekend, where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And it'll be good to see some old friends, my brother, bunch of guys I grew up with at the club that we grew up at in Maryland. And so I'll play a few rounds at my home club that I grew up at, and head to Charlotte after the weekend. So
there's something about that, isn't there? Like going back to the course that you grew up on. In fact, I'm going to be doing that in a few weeks. My course is up in Northern Idaho. It's a little 9-hole course called Pinehurst. And there's just something about like going back to the course when you were young that is so refreshing in some, even though you're playing golf, it kind of re-energizes you in a weird way. Is that true for you?
Yeah, for sure. It's, I mean, it's, I call it, we joke, we call it the home of golf, but it really is like my second home. Like that place was, you know, we had so many juniors, and the club and the membership, they were so friendly towards juniors. So there was a bunch of us always running around in the summers, and, I love getting back there to play it. It's mm-hmm. it's probably my favorite golf course just because, I mean, I just grew up there. I love it so much. It's called Argyle Country Club. Small little course.
Yep.
And it's a really, really fun course to play. It's where I learned how to play the game of golf. It's not overly difficult by any means, but a lot of, you know, back to front, slopey Poana greens, and a lot of creative shots. I learned how to be creative and play golf and score the golf ball. And that's how I've always been. I've never been mechanical. I've never really been too meticulous with my technique. I've always, you know, been a good little athlete. I'm a fierce competitor. So I was always just hit it, go find it, hit it again, find the quickest way to get it in the hole. And that's what this place, Argyle Country Club, taught me. And it's funny, I've shot 60 two or three times there. It's a par 71. And every time I go back to play it, I'm basically teeing it up, trying to shoot 59 or better. And it's a fun little challenge because it gets the juices flowing and gets me engaged as if it were a tournament round very early, which sometimes if you're going to play a fun round for buddies, like, you know, you don't, I typically, if I'm just playing for fun or not really playing for anything and it's just a social round, I don't play my best golf. But when I have the mindset that I'm going to get into this round today, which, you know, going there and trying to shoot 59 does for me, like I play much better golf. And that's why I think you didn't even ask about this, but that's why I like playing in the big events so much. It's like, it just has a little bit of an elevated, I know it has elevated in the title, but it has a little bit of an elevated feel to it where like, I feel like I'm playing in a major championship and my mind is ready to go. It makes me want to play my best golf. So I'm looking forward to going back this weekend to try and shoot 59. It hasn't happened, but every time I go back, I feel like it is going to happen and it's going to be a huge scene at the club and I will get to celebrate with everyone. So maybe this weekend's the weekend.
Well, if it happens, send me a DM, will you? If you shoot
59. I will.
Okay. Yeah.
I will.
Yeah. So it's a great segue into the elevated events, right? And now look, I'm in the business. I'm in the media side with the podcast. I follow it closely. I love the PGA Tour. And from my perspective, I have really enjoyed the elevated events. I mean, I've really enjoyed what they look like, what they feel like from my perspective. I thought they've been great to this point. There's 17 in all, as we know. It looks like you've played in five of them. To this point, the Air American Express, you were 50th, Iscut Waste Management, 14th at Genesis, 13th, nice showing at the Players, and then 25th at RBC. Is really the last month or so, it looks like things are starting to kind of, you know, move into the groove here just in time for into May in the summer where, you know, last year, 5th at the Memorial, 7th at the U.S. Open. So Dan McCarthy here, as things heat up, starting to play some good golf. Your feel and your opinion on the elevated events thus far in 2023, you like it?
I love it. And it's, you know, a couple of the reasons I just mentioned, like it feels like a major. You have all the best players there. And, you know, my competitive nature, I want to beat those top players. It feels like a major.
Wow.
But on venues that, you know, might not so big as a US Open, not, you know, it doesn't have these, I've never been to Augusta and hoping to change that obviously soon, but, you know, Hilton Head's a great place. That was one of my favorite regular season events before it became an elevated event. And then you add that the top players, you throw a handful more people in the crowds and, it's just a really, really cool buzz. Same thing with the Players. That's one of my favorite events of the year. My parents always come, family members, aunts, uncles, like it just has a really cool feel. That week also, I mean, that obviously it's known as the fifth major. It feels like a major when you're there preparing that week. You know, you have a little bit of the West Coast. Riviera is another one of my favorite golf courses of the year. And then you, you know, you throw in, you know, the appeal of adding the likes of all the top guys, Rory, Rahm, Scheffler, all these guys are playing these events. And it feels like a major. And I, not to say that I don't get up to play regular tour events, because I most definitely do. I just feel like when I, there's just that little extra added element to it, whether it's a major or these elevated events, like I'm just really excited to play them. Just because I know that the best players in the world are going to be there, and I know that you're going to have to bring your A game to compete at that level, and it's a challenge going into that week that I look forward to every week. So I think it's great. Obviously, the leaderboards have been just star studded; they've been packed. It's great television. It's also cool when you see. A couple other guys that you might not expect mixed in with those top guys. And I think that adds another really cool aspect to it. So I think they've played out great so far, and I'm looking forward to, you know, those events and all other events really the rest of the year.
So you look at in the next year, right? 2024, the top 50 from the FedEx will be in all of the elevated events. You're currently 47th, and I'm sure looking to improve upon that, become years in, maybe with another win, to your point, get into next year's Masters, start checking off all the boxes this year, you know, while you're at it. So you've got that, and then you've got other players can play in, right? They'll have the opportunity to play into elevated events. There's still some questions that need to be answered, it sounds like, with how many are going to be no cut events, those types of things. Let me ask you this, twofold. Number one, what percent do you feel like of players, just as from your friends and conversation, we don't have to name any names, but just could you give us a feel of a percent of players right now on the PGA Tour like the direction of where it's going?
I'd say more people probably don't like it as much, especially there's just a lot of no cut events and smaller fields. So
for next year, they don't like that.
Correct. Correct. And so you take the fall season out, then you have this season, January to August, and then you cut out more events because they're smaller fields. So the playing opportunities become, they shrink pretty significantly because you take out the fall season. That's not part of the FedEx Cup anymore. And then you add a bunch of small field no cut events. Then you even take a couple more opportunities away. So I think guys are were a little taken back just at, you know, how many events might be no cut events, and you know, them starting to realize that, okay, this event that I've always loved and played well at, I might not get into if I don't get into that top 50. So I think there's just a little bit of pressure. Unfortunately, it's not in my control. It's not in their control. Yeah. I guess it is if you play really well. That it is in your control in the aspect that you can play your way into those events if you play good golf. And that's the thing I'm focused on the most. I can't control what goes on in those board meetings or, you know, the PAC meetings. And I just know that it's a good time to be playing good golf, and I keep getting better and better. So
yeah,
if I keep doing what I'm doing, I will be in those events. I know for a fact that if I play good golf, like I'm capable, I will be in those events, and that's all I can really control. So, I like what they've done. Like I mentioned, I'm really competitive, so this is just going to drive me to get better. And like I said, I want to be playing against the top players in the world, and I want to be competing and contending as much as those guys do. So this just honestly, it just makes me more hungry and honestly feeds right into what I like to feel and how I like to be competitive wise. So it's just going to make me really hungry to want to be in all those events.
So the second part of that is, do you, let me position it this way. Do you and others, the majority of the players, understand or respect the fact that the tour, the direction that they've moved with these elevated events and understanding the landscape of professional golf with with LIV Golf and the competitor in the room and them paying a tremendous amount of money to bring these other players over there. And the reaction to that from the PGA Tour is that, all right, all of a sudden they've changed their direction, right? I mean, this has never happened before on the PGA Tour. It was roll out another tournament, and all of a sudden there's 46 weeks of professional golf on the PGA Tour. Now all of a sudden they're like, whoa, we pumped the brakes, we changed course. And you can clearly see the direction is that the tour, these elevated events, they're leading with their name brand names, right? Some of the bigger names on tour, and they want to showcase those and the need to showcase those, probably to protect home base and keep those guys on the PGA Tour. Is that something that you see and understand and respect, and do the majority of players kind of see that? And then, and as a result of that, as they look ahead in the next year, but is it too much that way? Is it too much that way in the way they've set it up for 2024?
Yeah. I mean, I think they actually landed on something more in the middle of what was actually proposed, from what I gather. Okay. And you know what? I get it. I'm not pushing the PGA Tour product. I'm not moving any kind of needle. And I get that. And a lot of players understand that they don't do that either. Mm-hmm. And they understand that it's, you know, the Rorys, the Roms, you know, Tiger, even though he doesn't play that much, they get that these are the top guys that push the product and help us play for the dollars we do. Obviously Tiger is the one, you know, the main reason that we are playing for the money that we have over the last 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And obviously a big reason why it keeps going forward. I don't mind that, you know, obviously these top guys, they probably have a little bit of leverage and they probably get what they want in some aspects to stay on the PGA Tour. I mean, that's no secret. Mm-hmm. And so I don't mind, you know, I think it's good for us players, because like I said, if you are playing good golf and you were in these top events with these top players, how can you complain? Right. Like it's like, yep. and the events outside of it, the purses are still going to be, you know, 10 million ish ballpark, where, you know, that's not even an elevated event. You're playing for $10 million and those top guys aren't there. So you still have great opportunities in those off weeks where, It's not, we'll call it a weaker field, but there's still a ton of guys with a ton of talent that play on the PGA Tour and those other events. So those are great opportunities. And obviously to play your way into the top events with the elevated purses and possibly some no cuts, those are amazing opportunities as well. I don't mind. I know that it's the top guys that are pushing for what they want, and that doesn't really bother me that much. Like I said, I don't really get caught up in all that stuff. I understand that, you know, Denny McCarthy is not, you know, pushing the sponsor dollars, and I get that. I totally get that, but I'm still able to benefit from that situation, where if I just keep playing good golf, you know, I'm gonna benefit, you know, tremendously from what's been happening.
It's just such an interesting landscape, you know, and like how the leverage did kind of shift to those top players, right? I mean, it really did, with all of a sudden a competitor in the room that's paying these extra dollars up front. I mean, you know, that's why these guys are going. I mean, you can list the other reasons. I get it, you know, as far as what that sounds like and feels like, and, you know, but the reality is that money up front is nice. And when it's a large sum, you know, like it's tough to say to no to some of those. So I don't criticize those guys for, you know, taking the money by any stretch of imagination, but it is funny how the leverage has changed. And now the PGA Tour looks and feels very different. The other thing that's hard to get your mind around, Denny, is the official World Golf ranking. By the way, you're currently ranked 47th. I know when we were talking earlier, like, what am I? I don't even know, like, because you're so focused on week in and week out and trying to win one of these elevated events, which I respect. But I honestly, man, I think about this stuff so much, probably too much. I feel like that LIV should get some. How many? I don't know. I really don't. Is this, do you ever think about this, official World Golf Rankings? And should these guys get – because, look, Bryson in Singapore yesterday, he said the official World Golf Rankings are not accurate anymore. And as much as it pains me to say this, Bryson's probably right. But I don't know how you filter through it. I really don't. 54 holes, no cuts, 48 guys. It feels like an exhibition to me. I don't know. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, I don't. I definitely don't pay attention to it as closely as it sounds like you do.
Good for you, Danny. Good for you.
Like you said, I don't even know what when you asked before we came on, I had no idea what I even was. I mean, last time I checked was probably over a month ago when I was on the bubble of getting into the Masters for that top 50 cutoff. But yeah, is he right? He's probably right. But you know, that's they knew that when they were making this decision. You know what I mean? Like they knew exactly what the process was going to be like. They knew it was going to maybe be a 6 months, year, couple years, could be couple. Who knows? That was their choice. That was their decision to they wanted to take all that money up front and go play golf that really doesn't have much meaning. Like you mentioned, I mean, it's 54 holes. From what I understand, you need to have 72 holes to have, to have world ranking points. I don't really follow any of the world, like what the qualifications are. I just know that's, one of them. But they knew what they were getting themselves into when they got into this whole process. So it's, I mean, yeah, should some of those guys' world rankings be higher or lower, whatever you want to call it? Yeah, probably. But that's what they signed up for. So I don't really have much else to say.
I'm with you. It's hard to say exactly because like you're entering into something that doesn't check all the boxes in the way the current official World Golf Rankings set up. Like you know that. So you're entering into that situation where, okay, there's some muddy waters here, as far as when it comes to official World Golf Rankings. Now, what's not muddy is the money that just hit my checking account. That's not money because that just hit, and that's why I signed the bottom line. But what is money is this is a new tour or new league or whatever you want to call it. So, so there's going to be a process in place that is going to take some time, to your point. So I – don't have any sympathy for that. Now, with that said, I think long term, look, the professional golf landscape has changed, and if something doesn't change in time, that seems a little ridiculous that Taylor Gooch and Dustin Johnson and these guys are not going to get some points for their play. How many? How do you weigh that against what you guys are doing week in and week out? I don't know. I really don't. I don't know what the answer is. So it's just another topic that I have to waste your time on, ask you the question. I'm not even going to wear you out with what you think about the ball, elevated events versus non-elevated. I mean, there's so many topics that you guys are asked. It's exhausting, I would think.
Yeah.
And so we'll have to see how that plays out from that standpoint. Last question when it comes to LIV, because I'm going to bring up, look at this real quick before we get, I'm going to a little teaser here, folks. Don't go anywhere because see this putting stroke right here. You just put this on repeat, right? Just put this putting stroke on repeat because it's just here we go. I mean, that's what you want, but that stroke, the ball goes in the hole.
it tries. It tries.
I know. Wait a minute.
I haven't, believe it or not, I'm actually really due to make a bunch of putts. I haven't really made that much over the last few months. It's been frustrating because I've had some really nice ball striking rounds/weeks, that I haven't. I've had a lot of really, really good opportunities and looks that I haven't converted on. And if I just putt, decent to really well, if somewhere in there, I would have had a couple of good chances to contend in tournaments, and I just haven't really been, I've still putted okay, well enough.
You've slipped down to strokes gain putting 30. You've slipped down all the way down to 30. So we got to pick it up a little bit.
Okay? That's still pretty good. I'm not naive, but for my capabilities, I know that it's hard to make every putt that, every look you have when you hit on the green to 12 feet for birdie. I understand that, but I haven't really, I haven't played to the best of my capabilities over the last month or two, but it doesn't mean I'm not putting well. I still feel like I am putting well. I've touched a whole lot. I've lipped out a lot. I just haven't quite found the hole as often as I would have liked over the last couple of months, but that's okay, because I know that if I'm not making many putts and still finishing 10th, 15th, 20th, that obviously means I've made some really good strides in other places in my game.
Before we look at the swing, last thing on professional golf as a whole.
Yep.
So Greg Norman's out there. He's saying that there's another group of names ready to go. You believe him? Do you hear, are these rumors? Are there rumors in the locker room like other guys?
Hasn't even saying that for years.
anybody coming up to Denny McCarthy saying, dude, I'm thinking about leaving.
No, I literally haven't heard anything. That's funny. When you said that, I'm like, really? There's another group of names that I haven't heard anything. If I did, I would have been like, yeah, there's been a few guys that have, you know, I've heard about, but I literally have not.
It's calmed down, at least from my perspective. All right, here we go.
I believe so.
Here we go. Ready? So I'm going to bring this up. Here we go. A little question for you. So, true or false, when I watch your putting stroke,
yep,
and I watch this routine, to me it looks like you're – watch how you walk in. So right here – you're visualizing and you are paying attention 100% to that putter face being exactly lined up to where you've picked out your spot first, and then you get comfortable and go.
Yes, I think you can see. I don't even notice, like when you guys were talking about this in the podcast with Brian, like I don't even notice that I do this. Like when people ask me about my putting, yeah, I like it's just part of my routine. I say that I don't really have a routine, but I guess this is part of it. Like I just do it. So I've just done it for such a long time and I do it so subconsciously that I don't even realize what I'm doing until I like see it. So it's kind of crazy to even watch because I don't look at much video and I don't really like spend time on having a routine. So, but yes, I like to pick spots anywhere halfway between me and the hole. So yes, I am, you can see I'm kind of right hand setting the putter to my spot and then kind of aligning my body to, you know, where I've set my putter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stabilizing the top of the grip with my left hand to kind of get it set up where I want to. And then once I get a good feel, you know, slide the left hand down to grip the putter and look and boom.
See, when I watch this, see that routine to me, Denny, is intimidating to me if I was playing with you because like you're walking up to the ball like you own it. Like that's like, oh my God, this guy, look at this. Like that's like swag right there, walking up and just so confident and aiming. I mean, it looks like you're gonna make it. From the very beginning.
I am trying to make it. I do feel like I'm walking into every putt with a certain intention. And I want to have conviction. I say those words like in my head all the time, like have a good intention, be like, have good conviction. Like I like know exactly what I'm doing, how I want to hit this putt, the pace, everything. So yeah, it's funny to watch. Yeah. It looks like a free flowing routine. That's exactly what I want it to be, very reactionary. Yeah. And yeah, I'm definitely trying to make every putt, even if it's 50 feet and I'm trying to lag it. I'm still trying to hit the best putt to give it a chance to go in.
So look at this. Look at this in the very beginning. Watch this. Like, so you're walking up like in control. Like I see people, like sometimes I walk up to it. Like I think I'm like walking up, like the ball's going to bite me, you know? Yeah. Like you're walking like, oh God, now it's my turn. I got to go up and hit, you know, like there's a sense of swag and confidence in your routine that just kind of flows right into now. Okay, there's the look, and then you hit it. Let me ask you this: with one of the things that Brian says, you do some right hand putting drills. It's almost like it almost looks like just a little overhand in tennis. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not, I know, but it kind of has a little bit of that topspin kind of feel.
You're definitely correct. And I explained to that, you know, I played a lot of tennis growing up and I play a lot of ping pong too. Mm. So yes, it's definitely an over, if you combined, say, the feel of rolling a ball and like a little bit of a mini tennis top spin forehand, it's kind of like both of those combined almost. Like, you know, it's a little bit of a top spin forehand where I'm trying to like, I think Brian mentioned it, where I'm trying to launch or lift the ball so I can get it rolling end over end. And it's, if you picture like, I'm really good at like rolling a ball too. Like, so if like, if you gave me a 30 footer and I'm just rolling it with underhand, like, you know, it's the same thing. I'm trying to get that ball just kind of like starting to roll. So it's a combination of, you know, that feel of that and maybe a little bit of kind of just slightly lifting up in there. I'm not like, you know, I'm not flicking my wrist over. I'm not like tossing it over. It's just a little bit kind of in my thumb and pointer finger. I'm just feeling it gently kind of lift over.
Who do you like watch putting? Like when you were younger, is there some players when you were younger coming up that you liked watch putting, or even maybe even today, like Taylor Montgomery, wonderful putter. Are there anybody that you would point to?
I just played with him actually last week in the first two rounds of the team event. He rolls it great. I know he's one of the best putters on tour, if not the best, especially this year. I know he's rolled the crap out of it, and he rolled it. He didn't make a ton at Zurich. I think those are some of the toughest greens to putt all year. They're overseed Bermuda, a lot of humps and bumps, a lot of double breakers. I think they're really tough to read. But I mean, obviously Tiger was like the best clutch putter ever. You know, I felt probably a little more mechanical. I mean, he's literally just like a statue where he didn't move at all and his stroke just looked perfect. And there wasn't anyone really growing up. I mean, I've watched a few guys, like, you know, I've watched some, you know, I've talked to Dr. Atella. You know, he was a volunteer assistant at UVA. He still lives there. I still talk to him, outside of actually putting, just him, you know, talking to him and freeing my mind and just basically point and shoot like I would like a basketball, just like really freeing my mind and just, you know, be really committed to the target I've picked and just be totally unconscious. So a lot of the key words that I talk to him about, like a lot of the things that he says stick out in my head. I take a couple key words here and there and I, you know, combined with my competitive nature and ability, I kind of just combine all that into, I mean, putting's like an attitude almost, you know, it's almost like playing defense in basketball. Like it's an attitude for me. Like I'm walking in there. I'm going to make this putt. If I don't, that's okay. Like I hit a great putt. And so that's kind of my attitude. Sometimes it's really frustrating and hard to hit it and just move on. But once I hit the putt, there's literally nothing I can do about it. There's so many variables that people don't really, I mean, wind, grain, whatever, wind gust, you know, it could be blowing 10. All of a sudden it starts blowing 20 in the middle of your putt and it, you know, moves the ball. There's literally nothing I can do about it. And that's something that's hard to accept sometimes, but I've done a much better job of just kind of being really committed to my putt, having a really good attitude going into it, hitting the putt and then move and just trying to move on from it. And that's the best way I can try and describe how I try and think about it.
So I know there's been a lot of times where you hit a good putt and it doesn't go in. Like that's golf. It's like, God, how does that not go in? You know, I mean, it's just, it happens all the time, right? When's the last time you hit a bad putt and it went in? Can you remember?
No, I don't hit that many bad putts that go in. My bad putts usually miss. my bad putts usually miss. But
God, you see, like Spieth hits a putt, he's walking, he's pouting, and it goes in. It's like, come on, dude! Like that guy's like once a week.
I know. I really don't understand how he does that often. It's kind of remarkable. And my partner, Joel Damon, last week, he did that a handful of times and he almost made a couple of them, but I guess, I guess he knows. I guess he's used to doing that. He did. He hit a couple putts. He literally hit it, and as soon as he hit it, he started talking and walking. And I'm like, dude, you were like talking before you even hit the ball. Like, you just just give it a chance at least.
See Joel. I've known Joel for a long time, in his caddy Gino. He's a North Idaho guy too. Eastern Washington. So where I went to college, at Lewis and Clark is where he grew up. So the Lewiston, Idaho, Clarkson, Washington, right there. That's where I started my teaching right there. And so it's been fun to watch Joel grow be the player that he is. And then Gino is a very good player in himself and lives in Lewiston, Idaho, and obviously just an absolute character. So it was awesome to see you guys teamed up and playing together yesterday. They're good people.
They're both great. I love both of them. It's almost like the golf just got in the way. Like, we were just having a great time, and then we just happened to play a couple rounds of golf. So they're great to be around.
All right, let's finish with this here. So you've been doing some work with, as I mentioned, Brian Cringham, your coach.
Yeah.
And we talked specifically in our podcast about some of the things. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but as a player and working with Brian, and you kind of evaluate your swing today, if you had to pinpoint, you know, maybe a couple things that you feel is different and has helped you, obviously statistically, improve your ball striking.
Yeah, I think my swing used to need some timing and kind of, you know, saving every now and then with my hands or arms. And I was able to do that because I have really good hand eye and I'm athletic. Yep. So I was able to, you know, understand that the club is in a bad position and somehow fix it like late in the downswing. But that's not going to work every day. And it's going to sure as hell be hard to be consistent on the PGA Tour week in and week out. So when I first started working with Brian, he gave me an anatomy lesson. I mean, before we even like talked like golf swing or what we want to do with my swing, like he gave me an anatomy lesson. He's obviously very smart. You talk to him. So we just talked about how the body is supposed to move and how it wants to move in the golf swing. So what we've focused on is really something I never really thought about that much is how my body is moving in the golf swing as opposed to, you know, like, you know, take it back to here, like, you know what I mean? Like it was, mm-hmm. you know, I think he knew that I was really athletic. And if I got some of the, you know, stabilizing some body parts and, you know, loading my body properly, that I would just naturally, you know, figure out how to do the rest. That's why Brian's such a good coach. He's really, really smart. And he knows how to relate to each person he teaches. So he knew for me that if I could just get, you know, a couple of the pieces, and it's still a work in progress. I haven't totally mastered what we work on. Sometimes it's tough. You know, if my body's not moving well, sometimes it's tough to do the things that I want to do. What it really comes down to is, you know, I had a kind of a weak right side. Internal rotation wasn't great. So I've really worked hard in the gym to kind of open up my right hip internal rotation so I could just turn a little bit more into my hip. Mm-hmm. Stabilizing right my right foot with the tripod. I know you guys talked about the tripod, the three points of that inside metatarsal, the heel bone, and then the outside kind of pad. So really stabilizing that and turning around that and keeping kind of my core and pelvis, together to start the backswing. And then the arms and shoulders can kind of separate from there. I have a tendency to kind of not get left early enough and everything kind of move together mm-hmm. to start the downswing. So we work really hard on basically. So once I make that turn into my right side, as I'm finishing the backswing upstairs, start to let my rib cage and pelvis and get pressure down left in my left foot. So I can then have a nice stable base left. I'm moving weight left and giving myself time for the arms and shoulders to, as Brian likes to call it, overtake right there. That looks like a good swing from that face mm-hmm. on view. I've gotten pressure left as I'm finishing my backswing, And I feel that pressure in the ground to help me, you know, push up and around with my arms and shoulders.
So on the downswing right here, you feel right in here. You're already
I'm trying to feel. Yeah. That little, almost like I'm moving a little bit downhill. I'm pushing, yep. I'm pushing off. You know, I used to have a tendency to just hang out on my right side for way too long. Obviously you can see here that I've gotten that pressure left. And that's at a good spot too. That's, you know, left arm parallel, on the way down. I don't even, I think that's called P5.
Yeah.
It might be, P6. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the technical term. I don't really, that's why I wasn't even really sure when I said P5, but, yeah, just it's nice because, I'm very feel oriented. So, sometimes the feel that I had for a couple weeks doesn't work, you know, maybe a month or two down the road. Like sometimes that magic feel or thought, sometimes only lasts for a couple months. And that's why I like Brian so much. He's always throwing things that, you know, okay, that, oh, that stuck to me. That thing that you just showed me, I'm a very visual learner too. So when we do things, he gives me demonstrations and the visuals of it really help me. Sometimes it's words. Most of the times it's feels or displays that he's given me, and I can take that and kind of formulate my own little feel with it.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're talking to one of the best players in the world here, but these are things that you can show a mid handicap player too. Like when I look at your swing, Danny, and I've looked at it over the years, like you're talking about those three, the tripod and the foot, and feeling that as you internally rotate a little bit. It looks like when that right hip now is climbed, it the right side of your pelvis looks a little bit higher now. You know, like you've kind of loaded a little bit more. The right side of your pelvis has gotten a bit higher. And then with that inclination, it's easier for you to kind of fall downhill, where now you can get into that left foot right there earlier. Where maybe before like the right side wasn't quite as high. Maybe the hips are a bit more level, and then you would maybe tend to want to spin away and not get to the left foot. But like you said, you're a world-class athlete, so you can make it work. So now you're working a little more up on that inclination, and now you can kind of fall heavier left. And I would imagine once you get to this point, Denny, like you could just feel like you're plugged in. Now you can just push up and turn.
Yeah. And this looks like, you know, when I'm swinging like this, when everything feels really nice and when I'm covering the ball, I feel like I can, it's easy for me to draw it a couple yards, and it's easy for me to hold its mm-hmm. line or cut it a few yards. Like I just feel really, way more efficient than I used to be. Like even though like I'm not the biggest, strongest kid, I do feel powerful like with this. And that's what Brian he's gotten the most out of, you know, how my body moves, and he's explained it to me in a really good way. And I still think I can get a lot better. I still think I can get stronger and maybe gain a few miles per hour swing speed. I don't go like speed chasing. But I do think the more I get in the gym, the more I grasp this stuff, I'll just naturally pick up a few miles an hour, maybe here or there. That's the hope. But yeah, like you were saying, it's like that downhill feeling movement of me, like feeling really like there's not much hand arm manipulation. Like I'm using, as you can see, that face on swing. The engine of the swing looks pretty stable to where, you know, I can feel like I can almost do whatever I want with the ball, which is a really good feeling.
Yeah, I love it, man. I even mentioned to Brian, and we were talking like, you know, as you've kind of stretched that right hip, like your left arm's gotten a little deeper, which I think's good. You know, like you've gotten it's just kind of a credit to that turn and that wind up, and you know, and it just that your club in transition just pitches back so perfectly, and you know, you look like you just got that little piston going now. That right side goes up, you can fall and just turn and turn and hit it. And what's cool about it, like when you show it to people, I think you make a good point. You feel like you can do it more. It feels almost endless, right? It almost feels like you can stretch it like more. It's like this rubber band. I'm gonna pull it back a little bit more, and then I'm gonna go and so you can go to the well. You know, you go to the well, and it's so strong. And so I love it, man. I love it, how you're articulating in the field. It's good stuff. Right? I think most people that are listening, man, I'm telling you, like, this is something, it's achievable for everybody.
Yeah. And I think the stuff that I've done in the gym as well really helps. Like I go in the gym, you know, 20, 30 minutes before every round now and I have a good little routine warm up. So I already feel loose when I'm going to the range, which I think is key. I've already trained some of those patterns in the gym. And then I go right out, I putt first, but I'm loose and warm to where, like, you know, my body's moving. I can't just go. I used to be able to do it. I can't just go straight out of the car and go to the tee anymore. I'm not going to hit it good. My body's not going to move well. You know what I mean? Like, I don't just because, you know, Brian and I have worked on this, it doesn't mean I can just, you know, sit here and talk to you for an hour and then just go straight to the course. Like I need to do something to warm my body up and train some of those motions so I can move properly. If I just were to go straight from here to the golf course, I'm not going to move well. I'm 30. That's not that old, but I feel playing 7 years of professional golf, I do feel a little older than I used to, but, I spend a lot of time training that motion and working on flexibility, mobility to be able to do that as consistently as possible day in and day out.
Oh, good stuff, Danny. Man, I've been following you. I love where you're going. I think I'm not putting any pressure on you, but I think a win's coming. I'm going to say that I'm cheering for you.
It's around the corner at some point. It's frustrating because, you know, I've all my buddies, everyone, a lot of people around me have won, and I really want to win too. I'm a very fierce competitor, and if I just keep doing the same thing, stick to this process.
You're on the right track.
Exactly. Putter comes around 1 week and boom, I'll knock the door down and hopefully many more after that.
Danny McCarthy, appreciate your time, man, here on the Stripe Show. Enjoy going home and best of luck next week, Elevated event in Charlotte.
Thanks, Travis. Appreciate you having me on. I'll let you know if I shoot 59.
Yeah, too. I want to be the first. I want to be the first one you DM.
I'll let you know. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Danny. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care.